You hear summer breeze in the distance as we pan a vast, beautiful ocean and a rocky shore. We glide smoothly just above the water's surface, picturesque and serene, as though taking us for a ride into the unknown. Guiding us through the rough shore, it seems to go on forever. The sun is just barely setting in the background, and we float higher in the sky, and around a winding road, spiraling around, as though to make us dizzy and make us unsure of what we think we see. A small man sitting on the edge of a cliff, drinking. And suddenly, it's night, and there's fireworks in the sky. It's the 4th of July in this quaint little fishing village. Good evening, and welcome to Gore, a horror podcast to keep you up at night. I'm the Wicked Kitten, always getting into mischief, and with me, as always, is my lovely co-host, TV's Travis.
Hello.
Also with us is the endearing, the ethereal Faye.
Hi.
And lastly, the dread you've been feeling since you hit play on this podcast, Dreadly.
Hello.
Why are we whispering?
I don't know.
Is it a secret?
No. Coming soon on Patreon is the ASMR tier, where we do an entire episode in whispers.
I mean, like, I totally would. I hate my job. So, yeah, it's another day, another episode. And what have we been up to? Travis, what you doing? What you watching? How you been?
No, I've been good. I've been playing Borderlands 3, going through that. I just fought the Penn and Teller characters, Pain and Terror. That was fun. Just been doing that and working on some models to paint, some miniatures. I have a Mandalorian I'm finishing up and still working on the Corvus Cabal.
Ooh. I don't know what any of that stuff is, but it sounds really fun.
You have to know what the Mandalorian is.
No, I know that. I think it's more like the Warhammer stuff or whatever. Wait, what was it? You're painting figures, yes. Right?
It's Warhammer.
Oh, okay. So I did know what it was. Whoops.
Yeah.
See?
So, Faye, what you watching? How you been?
Extremely tired because work decided I needed to work extra hours the last 2 weeks. So I really did nothing but sleep.
That's a nice job. Oh.
No, Dread, that's your job.
No, I didn't even watch anything. I did finally get a PS5, but I have yet been able to actually play it.
Nice.
But other than that, yeah, I'm looking forward to catching up on things.
That sounds great. I know I hate working overtime and whatnot.
Yeah. 12-hour days, 5 days a week. Yeah.
Yeah. At least you got that money to buy the PlayStation 5, though.
Yeah.
Yeah. Dreadly. Who are you? Why? Talk to me. Talk to me.
No. Darkness. I know what that means. That's a callback.
Yeah. How you been? What you watching? How's it going?
I've been good. Very hot, so I've been melting, but I managed to watch things and play things, so that was good. Let's start with games. We played a little kitty game. Not a kitty. A kitty.
Stray.
Yes. We played and finished Stray. It's not a long game. but it's a fun game. It looks pretty, and you can play as a cat, which is the best thing ever.
Yes.
How many things did you knock over?
Everything.
He literally found every single thing you could possibly fuck with, and he fucked with them.
Yay!
Yep, and every little bag that I got across, I put my head in there, and then panicked, as cats do. Other than that, I finished Final Fantasy IX, which is a great game, but it's a bullshit end. Because that boss is bullshit.
Don't hold back.
Just comes out of nowhere, and then he just annihilates your party at random. Because he has this amazing attack that just, yeah. Yeah, well, I don't like it when they just come out of nowhere now. And you're like, you finished two boss battles in a row, and then you go straight into that battle. No. But yeah.
I mean, it could be X-Death.
True. But considering I had so much fun playing that, I started Final Fantasy X, and I'm having a lot of fun with that too. And I did something that I didn't even know was possible. I won the Blitzball tournament with my crap team.
Yes. Just be prepared to dodge all that lightning.
No, I am not even going to start that.
Oh, come on. You have to get all the ultimate weapons.
No, I am not. No. Yeah, that's for gaming. Yeah. I'll try that, but the lightning is just no. And I know there's a kind of a cheat way to try and do it in a certain spot.
I can get you
even then, you'll have to be lucky. And
it's timing. Mm-hmm. It's all it is timing.
Yeah, but was it 100 times?
Yeah.
Without messing up once?
Yep.
No, thank you. Watched also some movies. We've been watching Predator movies.
In preparation for Prey.
Yes. We've done 1 and 2 so far, and both are still great.
Yeah.
Actually, there are no others.
Well, you know.
Well, Predators there's 2010. Bad. Yeah, Predators in 2010 was actually pretty good. Yeah. I enjoyed that.
I have not watched The Predator yet, but I've heard that it's not terrible, but I haven't also heard anything.
Not great.
Yeah. So I'm concerned, but I'm going to watch it because it's part of the series or whatever.
Well, we also watch them with people, so we're having fun, even if the movie is terrible. Yeah. I mean, we watched Shark Exorcist for crying out loud.
Well, and
that was a few weeks ago, but yeah.
Oh, what was
the Predator the
Ghost Shark movie, too?
Ghost Shark. Nice.
Other than that, it was Wes Craven's birthday this week.
Yeah,
we watched Red Eye, which is not what you would expect, but we did. And
that was a fun movie.
It's a fun movie.
I saw that in theaters.
And Cillian Murphy, or Killian, I don't know how you pronounce his name.
Killian.
He plays that role real good. He scares the shit out of me. No offense to him. He's a handsome man, but he's just creepy as fuck.
Yeah, no, it's the eyes. He's got very piercing eyes. So when he wants to turn on the creep, he can do that.
Yep.
That's one of the lesser known Wes Craven movies, by the way.
Yeah.
I don't think I've seen it.
You should. It's not what I would call a horror movie.
No, it's a thriller more.
Yeah. It's a thriller. Action. Is there action in it? I guess you would say that.
Well, there's fighting. I mean,
like, yeah.
But no, it's a movie. It's basically, it's not too long, so it just goes straight into it, and it doesn't stop until the end. It's good.
Yeah.
You know what I mean, Monica? Shut up.
I know. I know, but when you say that, it's like, well, yes, movies usually start and then they don't stop until the end of it. But I get what you're saying. It moves at a quick pace and it's just not, doesn't drag. And it's got, what's her beak? And,
laser beak?
No.
The Rachel McAdams.
Yep.
Did I get her name right?
It's a good one. I haven't seen it since I saw it in the theater, but I remember coming out of the theater thinking, wow, it was a good little thriller.
Yeah. I didn't watch it until later, and for a while I had it confused with Flight Plan, even though I know they're not at all the same movie, but they're both on planes.
I was going to say, yeah, it's a very different movie.
I just remember like, oh, is this the same thing where it's kind of like her daughter or something? But yeah. Anyway.
Snakes on a plane?
Yeah. The kid was a snake, and so it wasn't really missing as much as it was. Yeah. My week was filled with all bunch of those things and lots of working also. So that was very tiring, but watching the movies made the week a lot better and the shows.
Well, that's good.
Thank you. Did we watch anything else?
Yes, the most important one of all.
Okay.
We watched Deadly Friend with our...
Oh, yes!
Amazing Patreon.
Patron.
Whatever. She knows who she is.
Well, if she's listening to the show, she does.
Deadly Friend.
Yes.
Yes, that was something. Something
that
yeah.
was the July Patron movie. Which, if you were a patron in July, you would have been able to watch with us.
I also just realized Wes Craven. Yeah.
Yep.
It's Wes Craven.
Yep.
Yeah. No, we did a nice job rewatching. We got to rewatch that Serpent in the Rainbow because I remember that one being crazy. And when we were looking at movies, it reminded me that the first time that I saw Serpent in the Rainbow was part of a Joe Bob, like, Monster Vision thing when I was a kid. And it's just, I remember him talking about Wes Craven, and I was like, but wait, the Freddy, you know, the guy who does, like, my favorite movies with Freddy in it and stuff, he did this weird voodoo-type movie? It was really interesting because you get to see your director in a different doing different stuff, and eventually that would, you know, create my curiosity to go back and watch, like, you know, Last House on the Left and The Hills Have Eyes and stuff. So, but Wes Craven, just such a great director and like innovated horror movies time and time again.
Yeah, at more least than three times.
Yeah. We miss you, man.
And now for tonight's feature presentation.
I know what you did last summer.
Yeah, of course you do. You were there when we killed that guy.
Yeah. I was on this very same road.
Why are we all in the same car again?
We swore never to talk about that. Ever.
About what?
Murdering the guy.
Oh, look who's talking now.
Hey, watch out.
Oh, shit, not again.
What was that? Did we hit something?
No, I'm not drunk this time. I swerved.
Then what is that lying over there? It looks like a fisherman's outfit?
Go check it out, Dredd.
It's okay, guys. It's just a dog.
Oh, God, is it okay?
That dog looks familiar.
Well, his name tag just says Tony. No address or anything. That's odd.
What?
Well, one of his front paws seems to be a hook.
The guy from last summer.
What about him?
It was in all the papers. He had a dog just like that one.
Watch out!
What?
I Know What You Did Last Summer is a 1997 horror mystery starring Jennifer Love Pfefferman, Sarah Michelle Gellar, Freddie Prinze Jr., and Ryan Phillippe. Or Felipe. I don't really know. Who cares? It's the movie that quite literally wouldn't have happened without the success of Scream. It's based on the novel Don't Look Behind You by Lois Duncan, but adapted by Kevin Williamson. It's filled with all the healthy tropes a growing slasher needs. I have quite an affection for this movie. But how do you feel about it, Dreadly?
Ooh. Well, one might say this movie got its hook in me.
Travis, how do you feel about this movie?
No.
I'm just joking. Go ahead.
No, I love this movie. I saw this back when it came out. Like, I was too young to see it in theater, so I saw it the moment it came out on, I assume, VHS. Or were the DVDs back then? I don't know. Time is weird. But I loved it the moment I saw it. And it's from the same era as Scream, kind of the slasher revival of the 90s. And I must say that I always liked this movie more than I liked Scream. So, rewatching it. Yeah. Rewatching it for the I don't know how many time. Still love it. Still holds up. Still a good time.
Gonna have a good time. Travis, how do you feel about this movie?
So I did see this in the theater when it came out. And it is in that same era. It's, I mean, same writer as Scream. And I will say that I disagree with Dredd in that Scream is the better movie of the two of them. But I enjoy this. It's a great, straightforward slasher movie. For some reason, and I hadn't rewatched it in quite a while. And for some reason, my memory of it was more bloody than the actual movie is. And that kind of surprised me this time around. But no, I very much enjoy this. It's a very good standard slasher. It's got all the tropes, but it's an interesting setting. You know, Kevin Williamson writes his characters. I mean, you can tell watching it, it's the same writer as Scream. Like, Julie and Sydney are very similar characterizations, almost interchangeable. But it's really good. So, yeah, I enjoy this.
And Faye, how do you feel about Summer?
It's too damn hot.
How do you feel about this movie, I should say? I just didn't want to say the title of the movie 800 times. It's so long.
Well, you've still got another 776 times to say it. So, it's okay. I mean, it's not one that I would run out to go see all the time, but then I'm kind of the one that doesn't get into the standard human slashers that much. I mean, it has star power. Back in 97, these were big stars. And especially Sarah Michelle Gellar. Good old Buffy. Yeah. Actually, I think she started Buffy just after this.
Right? They were in season 2, I think, of Buffy when they made this. Yeah. The big
Buffy started in 97.
Well, they would have been filming, though.
Yeah. Okay.
Buffy would have already been filming. Like, the big star of this was really Ryan Phillippe at the time, prior to, because Sarah Michelle Gellar hadn't quite risen yet. Jennifer Love Hewitt was on Party of Five, and she was a burgeoning star, but I mean, she was 18, so she was still really young. She had done Kids Incorporated prior to that and her music career. But yeah, it has star power.
Wait, what did Brian do before this? Because I wasn't.
I can't remember.
I don't think I was aware of him before this and Cruel Intentions. But I think Cruel Intentions was the same year.
Cruel Intentions was the 98 next. 98, maybe.
Yeah, okay.
It was like 98, 99. You know, it was one of those where it had a lot of young stars on the rise as opposed to completely unknown. And so that definitely played in its favor.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of funny how like slashers of the 80s would be like completely unknown and then never went on to do anything else. Or mostly, maybe except for like, you know, with the exception of one or two. And this is, like Faye said, like star power all around. It's like four big names that are, I mean, at least three of them. And
Big Bang Theory dude. Yeah, a long time after that. This movie.
He's got the biggest career right now of all. Well, I guess not right now, but he probably has the most.
That was the one I had completely forgotten Johnny Galecki was in this at all.
Yeah.
And when I saw it in theaters, the thing for it was I had known him from Roseanne.
Yeah.
He had been in Roseanne for a while before that. And so I saw him there. And then I just, out of my mind, I completely forgot he was in it at all. Like, I don't know who I even thought that character was, but that the character he plays in this, Max, is so very different from both his character on Roseanne and then his character of Leonard on Big Bang Theory. Like, he's not really playing the same character at all, which is nice to see. But like, I had completely forgotten that he was in it. And I also forgot that Muse Watson was in it. He's Billy. Or Ben. Ben Willis. Is that the fisherman's name?
Yeah. Ben Willis.
Yeah.
And Muse Watson. Well, Muse Watson, aside from having an awesome name, because, I mean, the guy's name is Muse. Like, that's so great. He went on to play a character on NCIS that recurred a bunch named Mike Franks. And I remember him from that.
Whoa, wait a minute. How did I not like do that? I watched NCIS for at least 11 seasons of its 40 season run now.
Right. I know it's only been on the air for like 150 years, but like the thing with him in this that was so good was there's something with Muse Watson where he comes off, like he gives off this air of being dangerous and like frightening without. There's something like his smile is almost too straight for his face. You know what I mean? Like the way, cause he would give this look and he would have that smile and it was like his teeth were too straight and it just made him look off. And so like it worked for this character who, he's really on screen for the last, 10, 15 minutes of the movie. That's basically it.
Yeah.
But it worked. Like, I had forgotten that it was him. And I'm like, that's a good, you know, if you're going to have that type of a character, like, he's a good actor to throw in there and do that with. And he's not, it's not like he's a big, you know, he's not 6'4" or anything like that, but somehow has this intimidating presence about him, too. And his voice, he's got a very commanding voice, I feel like. So,
yeah. So this is a movie that I saw where I saw Scream right away. I think I didn't see this because I couldn't see it in the theater anyway. But it always had like this feeling for me, like the opening shot of the movie is just this, you know, sweeping shot of the ocean and these mountains. And there's something very like inspiring in there. It's kind of like the way that I make the scene setting. It set up the entire movie for me and how I would feel about this town, you know, surrounded by the water and all these different things. And it's always just, it's just like, I was watching it, you know, to rewatch it for this. And it's just the best thing. Like that shot. And then the mountain road and that whole just setting up. I remember loving this movie a lot. Not more than Scream. Sorry. I'm on the Scream wagon.
Ditto.
Also, we need to like make a really cool station wagon and call it the Scream wagon. You just drive around screaming, playing metal music or something.
A scream anyway. Chain.
I got my Jeep.
Beep, beep. But yeah, so it, you know, at the time it wasn't about like what movie was better or anything like that. It was just like, I need to watch every one of these movies that I can, you know, Scream and I Know What You Did Last Summer and Scream 2. And yes, I still know what you did last summer. So it was a wonderful
great movie. Time.
It was a wonderful time to be a young person, you know, Halloween H2O, like all these movies that came out in the late 90s. And, you know, because you grew up watching these old slasher movies from the 80s and you were like, oh, I missed out on some great times. And we got to have that, you know, like you said, revival.
Yeah, it was the slasher renaissance that got started with Scream. Wes Craven started that with Scream, and then this movie and The Faculty and all these other late 90s, Halloween H2O you mentioned is a great one. All these late 90s slasher movies that came back about. This movie got made because Scream was popular. Because Kevin Williamson wrote this script in the early to mid 90s. It was like 93, 94, I think, is when he started shopping it around, and nobody wanted it because it was a slasher movie and they didn't do good business. And so then he ended up, he was like, I want to say the story was he was house sitting for somebody and got this idea. And so he wrote the first treatment for Scream in like 48 hours. That ends up getting picked up, does gangbusters. It's amazing. And then this gets picked up after that because suddenly slasher movies are going to be popular again. And the reason that I like Scream more than this one is because it does feel like this was sort of the first draft attempt by Kevin Williamson to write a slasher. And so he just followed the paint by numbers and did everything that you do in a slasher movie. And then when he wrote Scream is when he got subversive and he played with the tropes and he played with the genre. And then Wes Craven putting his spin on that as well. And I do think that's the other part of it is like seeing the different directors, because Wes Craven is a horror director and a film director, and he had pedigree and he'd been doing it for Scream was what, 96? So 15, 20 years that he had been directing horror movies. Gillespie, who did this movie, James Gillespie, I think. This was his, Jim Gillespie. This was his first feature film. He had done a few TV things and like a music video. So there's a difference in the direction that I felt when I, especially watching it this time, where I'm like, yeah, I mean, this, it's good. It's very, this is very enjoyable, very good, but it is not, it doesn't have the polish that Scream has, which is why I like that one better, but you can definitely see the same DNA in there.
Yeah. And I think, you know, we'll obviously get into a deeper philosophical meaning of these things when we do Scream for the show, but like the, like us children who grew up watching the horror movies of the 80s, you know, we're the reason that Scream was such a success, because we knew everything. We knew all the horror fans, anyone listening to the show right now, obviously, we know all these things. We know the tropes. We know all the, we know not to run upstairs, you know, the whole thing. And, you know, that's what made Scream something different and something that we, you know, hold up in a high regard. And this is, you know, it's going back into the slasher world instead of the, you know, meta world. Mm-hmm. So it's not, it, I guess because it came after, it feels a little deflaty. But like, had it come out just 1 year earlier, we'd probably be saying, you know, like different things, like, oh, it was a different time back then and all that. But yeah, so I think.
Well, the other side of that is,
no, I can see out. That with the director, though. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Well, if it had come out a year earlier or 2 years earlier, it would have had, it wouldn't have had the budget that it had. It wouldn't have had the star power that it's got, and nobody would remember it.
Yeah,
most likely. I might remember.
Would know what we did.
It
last
would be time. An early '90s slasher movie that had like zero budget, right? Because no, they slasher movies weren't getting a budget at that time, unless you were making Friday the 13th or Nightmare on Elm Street.
I wasn't saying. Yeah, but that was not my, I just mean like we'd be, you know, looking at it in a different way. But because, you know, Scream had this extra edge to it that, you know, it was just, you know,
yeah,
a little less shiny. But yeah, but that, so that's my point is that, you know, that Scream was that way and it made us start thinking differently.
And it did something right. It did get parodied. It was used in Scary Movie.
Well, yeah.
What are you waiting for?
What are you waiting for? Actually, I've never seen Scary Movie, so I shouldn't talk.
You really need to. It was really good. The first two are good.
Yeah.
That's funny. Dredd said the other way around.
No, I like all of them. I said the first two are different than the other ones because the first two are the Wayans brothers and their comedy style, and the other are the Zucker brothers. I assume they're brothers. I don't know. The people who did Naked Gun and all that.
Mm-hmm. Well, brother, you made it sound style. Like I would like the latter ones better. The latter
ones? Oh, yes. If you like Airplane and all that, you would probably like that comedy more.
I mean, I technically saw the second one, but...
Grab my little hand.
But it's my can we talk? It's my strong hand. But I'm sorry, and I will die on this hill of that parody movies in the 80s are way better than parody movies of the, you know, 2000s.
But just as the slasher movies had a renaissance with Scream, so did parody movies with Scary Movie. Thanks to Scream.
And not another teen movie. Right. Didn't that come out around about the same time?
Yeah, parody movies are tough because parody has to be done smartly. And the problem is that after a while, your parody gets lazy. And that's the problem I have with most of the epic movie, disaster movie, whatever bullshit scary movie beyond like two. They just get lazy and they go for low-hanging fruit and it's not funny.
Hmm.
I mean, what makes Naked Gun work isn't that it was made in the 80s, it's that it was well written. Airplane is the same way. Scary Movie, the first Scary Movie, is a good parody because they I am of the mindset that parody works when you love what you're making fun of.
Yes.
Yeah.
Hot Fuzz is a parody. Hot Fuzz is brilliant because Sean, you know, Edgar Wright and everybody involved in that loves the action movies that they're making fun of. So that will come through in there. And I just feel like parody when it gets lazy, it's just pointless.
I'm sure it's not just to do with the years and stuff. And I'm sure there's been some good ones. But whenever I think back to like all the movies that I liked, it was all like Airplane and like Young Frankenstein, which, you know, like things like that. Like it was just different. Like to even Top Secret, I love, and Spaceballs, but just like everything that's like not another teen movie. I'm just like, what is this? Like, it's just not like there's a couple funny parts to it, but there's a lot of stuff that's just, it's just almost like shock value jokes.
It's lazy.
Yeah.
Like we watched an episode of Police Squad and I was like, that's just, it's great. It's silly. It's the, you know, those kind of jokes, but
it's the absurdity.
Yeah. But it's just, you're right. It's loved. It's well-written and I don't know. It feels like they don't do that. I'm hoping that comes back for a revival because they do like parody movies.
Oh, yeah. Too bad Leslie Nielsen isn't around anymore.
I mean, that makes a difference, too, right? You got to have the right people to deliver that stuff, too.
He was a great straight
man. He's a god of deadpan.
Oh, my God. We watched Airplane. We forgot to talk about that. Oh, my God. What? You know what? All the lines that I say them all wrong because I'm watching the movie. I'm like, oh, whoops. I don't say that.
Surely you can't be serious.
Don't call me Shirley.
So, oh, you know who else I forget about in this movie? What is her name? The sister, Bridget. Is it Bridget Wilson?
Bridget Wilson. Now Bridget Wilson Sampras. But yeah, Bridget Wilson.
I love her and stuff.
I forgot she was in this too. And that was one of the moments that actually they went back and reshot to add some blood to, because the original kill was just like a slash and that's it. There wasn't the blood splatter on the window, and the studio wanted at least a little more blood than that, because Gillespie was kind of going for a very sort of first Halloween, almost bloodless horror movie. So they did that. They added the scene where Max gets the hook to the jaw when Johnny Galecki's character gets killed.
Oh, I love that scene. After
the fact, that's actually really, I mean, and it's effective. And they did that to add gore, but also to give like a physical, hey, this guy is going to be a physical threat to these people early in the movie. Because if you think about it, if that scene's not there where he kills Max, you barely see the killer for the first half an hour or more of the hour and a half, hour and 40 minute movie. So they threw that in there, and that gives you this moment of like, ooh, okay, this guy means business and he can mess somebody up pretty good with that hook. And now we've got a tension point to go on. So that's smart by them to go back and do that and add that in.
That was actually, like, there's quite a few things in this movie that are very, very, like, visceral, which I feel is one thing that it has over, like, the Scream movies and stuff. Because, like, when he's chasing them, when the whole scene with Sarah Michelle Gellar's character, I felt that. The whole running and the fighting, and she's just fighting so hard for her life and running so hard, and it's just, you know, it ends up fruitless, but it's so much more than any other, than like any, they really like killed the main characters in this movie, right?
Well, so and you can see the influence that Halloween had on it, right? Because that first Halloween movie is all about tension rather than gore, and they went for that in this as well. This was setting up tension. It was setting up suspense. It was doing exactly that. They wanted you to be tense throughout that whole scene with Sarah Michelle Gellar, with Helen in the store. And you are the whole time. You talk about visceral, the hook to the jaw thing for me is very, like, I can almost feel that when it happens in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Just that, because he gets him there, and it's the act of doing that and then dragging him across the table is that very visceral moment of like, oh God, it's just horrible.
And it's executed perfectly, like speed wise and strength wise. Like the amount of strength he does to, like, you know, move his arm up and insert the hook. It's like just perfect.
Yeah, he's not supernatural. It feels real. The weight,
that's
everything going on feels real. I love that. I have to tell you this one, because this was a good piece of trivia that I found hilarious, which was they did the body cast of Johnny Galecki for his corpse scene in her trunk with the crabs. And apparently when Jennifer Love Hewitt opened up the trunk and saw that, she freaked out and like really, really bad, to the point where he had to like go to her and be like, no, I'm okay. Don't worry. Because that's how good that looked to her, is the story, which I thought was hilarious.
Yeah.
It was a good thing.
We killed him for the movie. No, I can understand that would be freaky. Ugh.
It looked really good.
Yeah, it does. But like, I'm going to like be just like, this is one of those annoying things in the movie, when she comes back and there's nothing in there,
mm-hmm.
and it's completely clean. And I'm like, what? There's not even like nothing. There's not one piece of sand. There's no crab hanging around somewhere.
Well, my guess,
how to clean up.
Yeah. I mean, I will go with the logic of he laid a tarp down before he put all that in there.
Sure.
Yeah, it's a fisherman. He knows what to do.
Yeah, okay. I'm just saying, it was a little too perfect.
It was, definitely. No,
I'm you should have smelled like crabs, too. You should have been able to be like, oh, well, it smells like crabs, so I believe you.
Yeah,
you
not know like a dead body or anything.
And that well, he had a can of Febreze with him.
I assume crab smells more like something than, I don't know.
It,
you know what?
It was one of those, too, where initially I was like, wait, why did he kill Max? But then when I thought about it a little bit more, it's like, no, okay, it makes sense because this guy isn't killing the four of them right away. He's messing with them. But when Barry goes to Max and threatens him and tells him, you know, look, I know you sent the note, blah, blah, blah. The guy's following, the fisherman is around there. So he probably overheard that. And that's mm-hmm. why he's like, I can't. Cause then Max is like, I'll call the cops on you. So he's like, all right, well, I got to kill this guy. Cause he'll go to the cops and then the jig is up and I can't fuck with these kids anymore. So that was one of those where it took me on this rewatch. I'm like, wait, why did he kill Max? Oh yeah. Okay.
Why not?
Cause he's not just indiscriminately killing anybody.
Yeah.
Like he's very, the character is very calculating in what he's doing.
Yeah. Cause in the book, apparently nobody dies. It's just like a straight up mystery. So I figure, you know, they could have made the movie like that, but.
Now, apparently Lois Duncan hates this movie because they have killing in it and violence and all of that. And it's nothing like her. It's basically the title.
Yeah. And
there's a fisherman involved.
She I think her daughter got killed or something. And so she didn't like the fact that it was like making light of killing people.
Yeah.
Where I don't think it's necessarily making light of it, but I guess I understand. Like,
I mean, I can see where she's coming from.
Don't like slashers either. You know, it's just, they think it's, and that's fine. Equal opportunity. But yeah.
I think one of the things too with this movie was coming off the coattails of Scream. And for the average moviegoer, they probably didn't realize Kevin, like, because the first trailers that came out mentioned Kevin Williamson being tied to Scream. But because that was a Dimension film, it was a different company. Dimension was like, no, you can't say he was the creator of Scream or something like that. So, but it has that same, because it was written by the same person, has that same feel. But they didn't quite, to me, have the same feel of like, we didn't have this question of who the killer is necessarily, or like if it's one of them. Cause you know, they pull the red herring thing with Ray, right?
Yeah.
Where, cause Ray is essentially the Billy Loomis of this movie, except he's not a dick. And they try to make you think like maybe Ray's in on it and all of that, but it's never really, you never get that feeling. It's not like Scream where it was this constant whodunit of like anybody could be the killer. We sort of know it's this fisherman character the whole time. Like I never suspected, even when I saw it in the theater the first time, I never suspected that any one of the four of them was the killer. Like in Scream where you're just like, I don't know who it could be. It could be anybody.
Well, if you want to guess who the killer is, you'll have to watch the sequel. Now that's a mystery. The only one that exists. Yep.
The only one that exists. You mean the two sequels?
I know, just the one. Stop it. Ah, that third movie. Jesus Christ.
That is the
fisherman goes into the mountains in a ski resort. Yes. Jesus.
Like,
what the worst way to make a sequel? Like,
it is terribly shot. And if I'm telling you something's terribly shot, it's really fucking bad. Like, I can watch some stuff. Not Sky Sharks, but I can watch some stuff. And this movie, that movie gave me a headache.
Also, you mentioned it earlier, but I want to double back on it. The opening shot of this movie, that helicopter shot pushing in over the ocean, is gorgeous. It is such a great establishing shot of the whole movie. And it's way longer than I remembered it being. For some reason, I remembered coming over the ocean, coming up the mountainside, and then like that being it. But it kept going, and it was the whole opening credit. I really, really liked that.
Yeah, it's got a a feeling of The Shining, but not as like sad, because like there's, you know, like, was it like music, happier music playing, but like that dude sitting on the edge of the thing. It's just, I don't know. It's idyllic in my mind because like I love the ocean and I love the idea of roads like that. And like, I've always wanted to just like, you know, rent a convertible and go driving on like the coast of somewhere, something like that. Like, it just seems so nice, you know, go for a nice date drive.
Come up here.
The coast of California, North Carolina.
Yeah. North Carolina, California. It's beautiful.
Because there wasn't any, like, there are no mountains in North Carolina on the ocean. So like, crap. All right, we'll film this in California. It's much flatter on the ocean there.
It's much.
It is. You don't have that. And so they're like, well, we need this. So I guess we'll just shoot this on the West Coast. No one will notice.
I will say, going back to the part when Sarah Michelle Gellar's character, that I can't remember her name for some reason, Helen gets murdered, that is my, like, that's the thing that really scares me in this movie, because it's that she almost gets to the people. She's right there. And like, he grabs her and he kills her while people are right there. And there's just something about that that always, it gets to me, you know? It's like,
And again, it's a movie that does it without having, you don't have to see the knife going into her or like the gore of that. It's doing it all in those wide shots like that. So you see the parade going by and you see the fireworks going off and she's 6 feet from it all behind a pile of tires because they just stacked a bunch of tires in this alley because reasons. Yeah. With a nice little they had the murder alcove right there in the tires. It's perfectly placed out. He needs to thank whoever set that up for him. But like, having that all in those wide shots like that is so much more effective because you can see all of that and that whole thing where she almost made it. She was right there.
But then she stopped. Turned around.
Yep. You don't do that.
Did anybody have like a favorite kill?
Oh, I already said hook and throat. Yep.
Johnny Jaw Lecky. I'm done. Dropping my mic if it wasn't attached to an arm.
I mean, that for me is the best kill in it. It's the most inventive. It's a movie with only 6 kills.
6.
So it's not a huge body count by any stretch.
Are we counting the dude in the beginning? Wait a minute. Okay. So there's Helen's sister. Mm-hmm. Jawlecki, Felipe.
Yep, Barry.
Barry.
The sheriff's deputy, the officer.
Oh.
Ah, dead dude.
Whoops. And.
What's his name? Dude, what got killed at the beginning of the movie? Dumped in the water.
Oh yeah, the. Not
the
Ben.
Boyfriend.
Mike? Why can't I remember
his name? Blah, 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 blah. I don't know what his name is.
No. Oh, yeah. I always forget Anne Heche is in this movie.
And she's really good.
Yeah.
Like, really effective to have. That's another one of those where it's kind of like, it's a little red herring. It's a little bit of like, why are they even going out here and doing this? But it creates a moment or two, and it gives you something else to think about, like that could be going on. And you don't know exactly where she's coming from on everything. And it's a good performance.
Yeah. Like it kept the mystery going. Cause it's like, is she involved? Does she know?
Yeah.
Is she the one? Well, you know,
And ultimately, it makes no difference. It doesn't matter at all whether she is or not. It doesn't have to play into the plot. I feel like in a lesser movie, and again, I'm not calling this great, but it's very good. But in a lesser movie, that would feel pointless. But the pacing of this one is so good that you can throw in those scenes and go back to it. Like, it's not just one, it's two of those. And the second one is the one where you're like, ah, I don't really know what's going on now. Cause like having just that first scene inside the house would be enough for that character. But I feel like going back and doing the second scene where she's outside working, cleaning the fish, helped to make that first scene even better with Anne Heche. So that was a good little detour that didn't take away from your plot at all.
Yeah. And the whole weird thing with, cause it also mixed in with the whole Ray like guilty thing because I liked it, but you know what it's time for?
The 13.
The 13 is a specially cultivated list of tropes or favorite things from horror movies. This list may change or be adjusted as time goes on and in real time because this is real life. And it is summer and it is very, very hot. But there are no hooks. There are no hooks. Number one, kitty cat.
No, lots of fish.
There were fish. Not
maybe a catfish.
Crabs.
Crabs.
But no cats.
The crabs were cute. I'll give the crabs.
Crab people. Crab people. Oh, wait. No, just normal crabs.
Number two, Volkswagen.
No, BMW? But there was Mercedes and BMWs.
I don't remember Mercedes. I know the BMW.
we're specifically looking for Volkswagens. Like, that's the...
No, sorry.
That's the whole point. Number three, scary location, time of the year, summer camp, beach, abandoned mental hospital, holiday, full moon.
Oh, the 4th of July.
Fishing village, 4th of July.
Wait, isn't it like a crab festival or some shit like that too?
No, it's the 4th of July.
No, they call it, no, I mean the parade that they have, isn't it like crab season or crab of the month?
Pretty spread to crabs.
What the fuck is the name of the thing? She gets crowned the something queen or whatever. And then the next year it's the same. The crab festival.
Sure, we'll go with that.
Crab queen. Has nothing to do with that. But we do have Dawson's Beach.
Yeah, I mean, there was a beach. Yeah.
Travis. Dawson's Beach. Come on.
I know.
Kevin Williamson.
I caught that.
That's cute. I love Dawson's Creek. Shut up, everyone. Don't you judge me. Don't you judge me. I was very young and very impressionable. And that show taught me.
If you want to judge Monica, please send us an email at gorepodcast13.
Yes, please do.
Judge us. Beach.
Yeah.
So beach, definitely summer. Beach, summer, and... 4th of July-ishness and crab festival we're going to add in there, which just sounds like something that they do at Red Lobster once a year. Number four, meta humor, fourth wall breaks, mentioning the title.
Mm-hmm. Definitely knew ding, what ding, ding. Is that summer.
They literally write it down.
It's less meta than other late 90s slashers, but it does mention the title.
Here, I have this note.
Number five, archetype characters. Crazy Ralph from Friday the 13th, Randy from Scream, Dick Halloran from The Shining, Norman Bates. Any archetype characters?
Anne Heche, kind of. She's not like a true archetype character, but she's got a little, like there's a little bit of Crazy Ralph in there. There's a little bit of like, are you sure you know what you're getting yourself into, but also is she involved in it? But there isn't that, you know, defined archetype character, I would say.
Well, closest would be stupid cop dude.
Well, there, I mean,
are you screaming that someone's getting killed? Well, I'm just going to talk to you here instead of going up there immediately and letting the killer go. So, yeah. What? And I'll mention him again soon when we do the stupid shit people do.
Yeah, useless police officer. Yeah, I don't know. Not really, I guess, if we go by our definitions.
Yeah, well, I mean, like, we can always add if there's something different, because it's a living list.
Yep.
But these are just examples, but I can't think of anything either, so.
No, and the movie didn't, like, create one either, right? Like, Randy in Scream, it was that character, that type of character didn't really exist until then. That movie created this movie just because this one kind of plays by the numbers and is your standard slasher. It didn't really give us anything new.
Yeah, exactly. Like, if we were to, like, well, we did talk about Psycho at one point, and God, I hope we talked about how Marion is, like, basically the first of her kind being the main character who gets killed. So she's whatever that would be, archetype character, which would be like the same as another movie that we'll do another time, because now I don't want to spoil it in case somebody hasn't seen it yet. Anyway, we'll talk about that on another episode. But you get my point. Yeah, so stuff like that. But we don't have that written down, but still, like, it's...
Yeah.
It would just end up being the longest list ever.
Oh, sure. No. But no type character.
Let's see. Number 6. Pointless boobies, weird wangs, moonies.
Nope.
Nope.
No.
No nudity.
No nudity. There's some bathing suit scenes, but...
I mean, the movie basically is R-rated for language and suspense.
Mm-hmm. Well... I guess the hook to the jaw and stuff, like, there's a little slashy blood.
There is a little bit, but it's not like a hard R for gore or nudity or anything like that. It's
hard
mostly on the language.
Mostly. Number 7, retelling the legend and or establishing the movie's rules, breaking Randy's rules.
The beach scene where they're telling the story.
I mean that's
the archetype of that thing, right? It's the sitting around the campfire. In this case, it was sitting around the fire on the beach telling scary stories to each other, but it also establishes what motif the movie's going to go for with the hook for the hand guy. So
and it also made me go, isn't that funny that they were talking about, you know, a hook, and then the killer has a hook? So it always made me wonder if he was watching them before that, which is weird, which is probably not possible. But in any case, like, it was always kind of like that weird.
No,
you know, he could have.
He wasn't even. He didn't even kill him yet.
Well, yeah, that's how he could have been there. I don't understand.
It's also one of those where it's like it makes sense because of the environment that they're in, the Fisher. You know, the fishing village type thing. That's your scary stories are born out of what's around you, right? And so in this case, this scary story, because the guy with the hook for a hand story is fairly well known, but it would catch on there a lot more than it would, say, where I live, because you actually have the fishermen and you have people see that hook hanging around all the time. You know, around here, it might be like a wood cutting axe or something like that would be what would take the place of the hook for a hand type of
thing. Did you guys not have that story over there?
No, we definitely, I've heard that story, but like, it's not nearly as prevalent as it would be in a fishing town. And then for somebody to actually be stalking them and trying to kill them to use a weapon like that would also make sense given where they are. So it's there's a little bit of that going.
But it was one of those like creep factors where I wasn't sure. But so, like, going back to the story, you know, like, they all four of them tell like a different variation of that. And I love that because I've probably heard every single one of them from some other different source from when I was like a, you know, 6-year-old kid to like, you know, 15 or something like that. And I just think that's, It's so interesting how we all like do the giant game of telephone with these urban legends and stuff. Like,
you know that's what another we have to do, right?
Watch Urban Legend?
Yep.
Well, yeah. They had a show here in America, and it was called like Urban Legends or something like that. I can't remember. And it would go through and talk about different urban legends, and it would like show where they came from. It was a very interesting show. Number 8. Dance sequence, montage sequence.
Well, there was really? A parade sequence. Yeah.
There was parade a pageant or, sequence.
Ooh, the talent portion.
Talent.
Talent.
Also, was it me or did the girl that was singing in the bathing suit for the talent portion of the competition look like she was 40?
Probably was.
I didn't notice, but maybe. Now I have to go back and look, so.
Oh, it's a small town. You know, people you age keep doing there. It until you win one day. I guess. Every year.
But yeah, other than like all the different parade montages and stuff, like no.
The closest we got was Barry going to the gym and then hitting the punching bag before going into the shower. And it wasn't really even a montage. It was just like, that was as close as we got to a montage.
Workout sequence. We'll just add that in there.
There you go.
So, and I will say it was very good. Number 9. Someone does stupid shit, or that scared the shit out of me. Mm-hmm. Whichever applies. Or just name your favorite trope.
I mean, the entire plot of this movie is based on people doing stupid shit. Like, the inciting incident is, oh, God damn it, we hit somebody with a car while driving. Okay, he wasn't driving drunk, but the drunk asshole was causing all sorts of problems. And then come up with the brilliant idea of dump the body in the ocean. So it's like, yeah, lots of stupid shit.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And then run away when the eyes open and he starts trying to fight back. Mm-hmm. Leaving him for dead.
That was pretty stupid. Mm-hmm. Like, you just even you saw him get up and...
In their defense, if you hit someone with a car and then dumped them in the ocean, you're not expecting them to come back from that.
No, but his eyes did open and he did try to fight Ryan Felipe.
Oh, sure. You should have done that earlier. Also,
let me reiterate. He had been hit by a car.
I understand what a car is.
His eyes can open up. That doesn't mean that he's going to survive and be able to actually fight back.
Sure, but like... He's alive. And that's why Ryan dies first. Because he knew that he was still kind of, you know, alive. And he left him there to die. Whereas everyone else assumed that he was dead. You know, if Jennifer Love Hewitt's character, I should say, if Jennifer Love Hewitt's character, oh my God, why can't I talk anymore? If Jennifer Love Hewitt's character knew that he was still alive, she would not have left him there. Like, she would have fought like hell to make sure that he got like help and gone to the hospital and whatnot. But Ryan wasn't going to let that. Ryan, I wish I remembered their character names. Ryan wasn't going to let that happen.
Well, no, they all saw him come back, like open his eyes before they pushed him into the water.
Yeah.
Wait, I thought he opened his eyes underwater.
He did open them underwater. Well, but he opened them while he was laying on the dock. They all saw that.
Yeah, he had to grab the crown.
Harry wasn't the only one to have that to see that happen.
Oh, well then fuck them all.
He died first because he's an asshole.
Yeah, well, he deserved it anyway. He did dive in to get the thing, though, right? So, man, I completely forgot about that.
Mm-hmm.
But in any case, he still deserves to die first because he was the jerk who's drinking.
Well, of course.
Well, I noted two stupid things.
you know,
go ahead.
To limit ourselves. So the cop I mentioned earlier. So if someone tells you there's a dude in a fisherman's outfit killing people, and then you drive into a little LA and you see a dude dressed as a fisherman, I would probably be on guard a little bit and not just get murdered.
But
well, to be fair, it's a whole town of fishermen.
And it's also a policeman in a slasher movie, and they are useless.
No, but still, I just wanted to point it out. And something I've pointed out in earlier movies is, if someone's fighting for their life, don't call out their name so they look at you. Also, if you're fighting for your life and someone's calling out your name, don't look.
Two for distraction.
Yeah.
So bad. I like that there's a parallel for me with Sarah Michelle Gellar in that car, like trying to get out, and Scream 2, which she was also like has a bit part in, but there's also a scene in there with a car and they're trying to get out of the car, the police car backseat thing. I just like
Kevin Williamson likes to write that, doesn't he?
It's very, because like, you know, obviously I don't like being trapped in places, and to be trapped like that and to see like the killer is there, that's like terrifying.
Behind you. Wait, behind she said that many times, didn't she?
Yeah, she tried. She definitely tried. Can I just say Ryan's character was pretty tropey and caused a lot of the problems in the movie. And he just got angry a lot. He was like that dude who just got angry about everything. He didn't try to help or figure things out. And I'm not saying he could have, but like he was just against everything.
There was like an attempted sort of subplot thing of like the rich kids, they were the rich kids in town, and that Ray was not part of their crew, but he was dating Julie and therefore trying to be like them. But they never went super into it other than going to Barry's house, and he's got this great big house that his parents own and he's staying in and all that. But he's the tropey rich kid asshole quarterback in high school.
Yeah. Definitely an asshole. But yeah, if you can think of any tropes and you want to write into the show, because Monica can't remember the other one that she had, write into the show at gorepodcast13@gmail.com. Number 10, solitude shots. I'm going to go back to the beginning of the movie. It's very just, you know, makes me feel alone in a great big world.
Beautiful. Shower scene.
Oh God. Yeah. The shower scene. Yes. Sorry, I was thinking about the shower scene. God, that ending scene. Can I say that?
Don't talk about endings here. What?
The sequel bait?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
That makes zero sense whatsoever.
He survived, and it's a year later again.
Well,
and he still knows.
Hey, that's a great title, okay?
I mean, like, I think I assumed it was a dream, but...
That's what I think.
Like, that's just what I was thinking. But then, watching 2... We'll get into that when we watch 2, but like, wow, that one has a lot more stupid shit. Let's just say that.
Yeah, I mean, that one didn't have, I don't think Williamson wrote that one. So, like, it's one of those where, again, like a writer, if you change writers, you're going to, you tend to lose quality. Somebody like Kevin Williamson, who writes good scripts, you don't have him write your script and you make a sequel to his movie, probably going to have a step down in quality.
But it's better.
Scotch. Get out. Number 11. Scary score. Spooky soundtrack.
It's nope. 90s SL, I guess.
Yeah, just like 90s rock. There was that one song that would play. That
The cover of Deep Purple's Hush that plays.
I love that, by the way.
It's a good cover. It was all of the marketing for this movie. Like every trailer and TV spot played that song, and it was played in the movie and then over the end credits. It's a great cover. But that's the only memorable one. Like, I don't remember many of the other songs. The score reminded me of something else when I was watching it yesterday, and now I can't think of what other movie it was reminding me of. But it had a feel like it was the music from a different movie that they just reused.
It's like you say that the Hush song, which I didn't know was a cover when I watched the movie originally, when I saw the trailer and all that kind of stuff. But I hear that and I see the movie play in my head. That's all I hear. It's like if you were to play that woohoo song and all I see is Starship Troopers. Like, that's it. There's nothing else that plays in my head. Because that was the song for the movie. It was like everything that played.
Yeah, the marketing did its job. It tied that song into the movie, and you have those both intertwined now. And I knew at the time because I had heard enough Deep Purple growing up that my dad had, so I knew the song Hush, and I was like, oh, it's a cool cover of this song, and I do that particular version of Hush. I do equate to this movie when I hear that cover of it. I'm like, oh yeah, that was the one for I Know What You Did Last Summer. Mm-hmm. And it's a good cover.
Then anyone else like that song? No.
It's okay. It's good.
What about the parade music? Nobody liked the parade music? Nothing?
Just sounded like normal marching band.
Well, best parade music we've had on this show so far.
That's true.
That's probably true. Because I can't remember anything else with parades. Number 12. Final Girl. Used in a positive way. Breaking convention. Not breaking convention. Basically convention.
By the numbers.
Used in a positive way. Yeah. I mean, like, she's the good moral compass. I mean, she's got the guy with her. And he helps.
Yeah, but no, I mean, it worked. I do have to say that what they used in place of ice in the ship's hold, because it's meant to look like ice, and obviously it's not ice cubes, because there's no way they would have spent that much time with her, like, crawling around on it, but it looked good.
Yeah.
True. Like, that end chase through the boat is tense.
Yeah, I didn't know boats looked like that in there. It was really interesting. I like that there was like it was like a little maze thing with all these little compartments. But yeah, it was gelatin or something, right?
Yeah, it was like little gelatin cubes and stuff. But it created the look. But no, there was no convention breaking. This was standard issue slasher movie.
Also, exactly. Lovely placing of bodies there to be found at the same time. Like, perfect. Oh, yeah. I love it when they do that.
I think
they hide the body somewhere.
Going back to the tropes, yes, that is a good trope right there. Just that, or when the body falls out at the exact right time.
Yes.
But yeah, she's not the worst we've seen. She's not the pinnacle, but she's not bad. Number 13, the Savini Scale of Gore. Not the quantity of gore, it's the quality of gore, special effects, and monsters. So how many?
Fish hooks.
Hooks to the jaw.
Hooks to the jaw. Out of 10.
I'd say 7.5 or 8.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
there wasn't a lot in it, but what was in it was good.
Yeah, this was a movie that intentionally didn't want to be bloody and didn't need a lot of effects work, but the work that they did do looked really good. That body cast, that when she opens the trunk, that looked really good. And having the crab crawl out of the mouth like that.
That was a good looking crab.
Was really well done. We mentioned already the fish hook to the jaw was a really effective scene, and it looked good, and they got like the physics of it right to where it felt real. Yep. Rest of it was kind of a lot of off-screen kills or like slash to somebody who's facing away from the camera type of thing to get around quite a bit. But no, yeah. What they did looked good.
Dread.
I completely agree with that. Plus, considering we have monsters in this definition, I personally love the fisherman's outfit. Yeah. It looks impressive. I mean, it's a simple thing. It's just, you know, what do you call it? Slicker and a hat.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And yeah. Some boots and a hook. But it looks good. And the way they film it, like the camera on him when the... you call it with a light behind you and all that
silhouette
makes it look very impressive. So I would agree with the 7.5.
Yeah, I think it worked to their advantage that they weren't trying to go for very bloody and then added some bloody to it, because then it made like this nice little combination. It's kind of like how if you add chocolate to vanilla ice cream, you can end up making it too chocolatey. But if you mix together chocolate and vanilla ice cream, it's perfect.
Yeah, they went for the right amount of suspense and then put just enough blood in the movie so that when you see it, when he slashes Bridget Wilson's character and you see the blood hit the window like that, we haven't seen a lot of blood in the movie to that point. And so like it hits harder
mm-hmm.
to see it at that point.
I'll consensus with all of you.
Then yeah. Why do you only have a 7, Monica?
I don't know, because I stopped writing and then I hit space. 7.5 on the Richter scale from all of us. Yeah. And that'll wrap up the 13 for this episode. And now we play What the Hell Was That? It's where we play a clip from our next movie, provided by our clip curator, Dreadly. Play the clip, Dreadly.
Can I come in? Can I come in? You're Julia, right?
That's right. Who are you?
I'm Frank. I'm Brother Frank.
Oh, yes.
I came for the wedding. Well, can I come in or not?
I'm sorry. Of course.
Can you guess that movie? Give it a try next Friday when we post our gift clues on our Twitter. So follow us on Twitter at Gore Podcast so you can be the first person to guess. And if you get it correctly, you'll get a shout out on the next episode. We didn't get any emails this week, but we love emails. So why don't you send us one at gorepodcast13@gmail.com. We have a Patreon, and like we mentioned earlier, we have a level where you get to watch a movie with us once a month. And, you know, we do just saying we watch Deadly Friend, which... even though we didn't even think about it ahead of time, technically we did it for the month of Wes Craven's birthday. There you go. We should plan things like that, actually, now that I think about it. Be like, when John Carpenter's birthday and we'll watch The Thing or something like that. But yeah, if you want to check that out, you go to patreon.com/gore13 and you could be like Claire, who has been a consecutive member at our, I think it's the Hellraiser level, and she will shortly be getting some lovely merch. It's very, very exciting. She's going to be getting a t-shirt and a sticker. So.
Woo!
Sticker! Wouldn't you like a sticker too?
Yeah. I am a sticker. Oh.
Because you're stuck on me?
Always.
Until next time. Travis, where can people find you?
Easiest place to find me is on Twitter at TV's Travis, TVS Travis. I post all my thoughts and stuff there. I just recently did going back from starting in 2022 and going back every year, listing a favorite movie of mine that was released each year. I think I went back as far as like 2006 or so.
Ooh, cool. Faye, where can people find you?
Also on Twitter at Chibi Faye Lynn. I don't talk much, but you're welcome to follow and say hi.
And finally, Dreadly, tell people how they can travel to the bowels of hell to find you.
Well, you can come find me on Twitch or on Twitter or wherever. No, that's all, basically. Maybe something else next time. Who knows? I don't know. Well, I know. Anyway, you can find all the links on thedreadzone.com, where I've put a list of all of them. Monica, where can people find you?
Well, you can follow me on Twitter and Twitch at WickedKitten13. I do a Heroes of the Storm podcast called Q for Fun. We recently released an episode talking about all the stuff going on in there, which is just a lot of drama. I do a Hearthstone show where we just started talking about the most recent expansion. And actually, that's all I do in this show. And you're already here, so you don't need to know about that. Okay? Okay? Got it? Capiche? Is that how you say that? Yeah. And you can find all that wherever you download your podcasts. Thank you, everyone, for listening. And I hope we made it a little harder to fall asleep tonight.